listening to KBOO Portland.
Did you know that 80% of KBOO's funding comes from individual supporters? Show your support by donating to KBOO on GiveGuide today at www.kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our end of the year fundraising goal. That's www.kboo.fm/give. And thanks for supporting volunteer-powered, community-focused radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, the Working Class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes, broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month where we typically interview educators, talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today in the Zoom is Chandra Roberts and Ben Broom. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's start by telling us some about your teaching background and experience.
This is my eighth year as an educator. This is my second year in Oregon. Before here, I was in Tennessee. And before that, I taught in Oklahoma. And all of those, I've been teaching English and theater.
Yeah, and I've been teaching 9 years, mostly social studies in high school, a little bit in middle school, also do some language arts. Most of that time has been in Oregon, but I had a few years up in Washington.
Gotcha, great. So we always like to ask our educator guests about what inspired them to become a teacher. So tell us what inspired you.
I am actually a journalism major, so I didn't come to teaching, like, that wasn't the first thing I wanted to do. But I really like seeing the opportunity to help, like, guide students to seeing their own potential and strengths and to kind of be the adult I didn't have as a kid.
Yeah, so like Chandra, I didn't know about it initially as a passion. I actually pursued a career doing humanitarian work, hearing aid. I was really focusing on international experiences. So working with immigrants in different cities around the US, did some overseas work in Uganda, helping an orphanage start, working with the Indian community in London. So some different places, and I guess a common need I saw was that school didn't connect with student experience. And so I just particularly saw that there was a lack of understanding of the world and that that was really acute for a lot of American youth. So in teaching social studies, a quote that I keep on my wall to kind of guide me in what I want to be possible for them in bridging that divide is that seeing education as a window and a mirror and wanting it to be a way for them to see the world and themselves in a new way.
Gotcha, great. And then we also like to know what teachers enjoy most about teaching, but I'm gonna kind of shake that up a little bit and just, you know, looking at the distance learning, online learning, how's that going for you so far this year?
I personally, I'm trying to see it as a catalyst to do all those things that I wanted to do. While teaching in person, like backing off of grading so much and really handing over the reins to the kids as much as possible.
Yeah, it's hard. But I think in that need, it just creates a more clear partnership, kind of like what Chandra was saying, that the students know that they need to own what they can, that they can take a lot more responsibility. And the silver lining too is having a lot more raw conversations around effort and what's worth it and why am I even engaging. So that authenticity piece, I think, is a bit more open than it was beforehand.
Great, thanks.
So we invited you on because you're organizing with a group called Teachers for Good Trouble. So can you start by telling us about the history of the group, how it was started, and how you got involved?
I'll go first, since chronologically I happened upon it first. To begin, the good trouble comes from the John Lewis quote that he said in his remarks on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And I saw a post by Chevy Brooks, who is an Atlanta educator, and he hosts a podcast called Teacher Talk Live. And it said, like, who wants to end standardized tests? And I was like, I do. I'm all about that, on Instagram. And he sent me a message and is like, join this group me. And it kind of exploded into a whole movement. That was November 16th. And within a week, we had a petition, we had a website, we had an Instagram page. I mean, it really blew up into a national, international movement.
Yeah, so Chandra actually was the one who invited me into this. We're both part of a group, a Google group that formed in the wake of George Floyd and a lot of like racial awareness at a new level. And it was just called Coalition for Black Teachers, just kind of raising that. So we peppered in all sorts of events and movements that are starting. And so she just invited people in that group, like, hey, if you should join this thing. And so that was right before Thanksgiving. And yeah, I just kind of jumped on the train as soon as I could and seeing, hey, what's needed? What is this about? I'm for it. So that was just my connecting point kind of later in that. And then it's just continued to grow at that time. Our petition, I think, was the early stages. So I think still under 1,000, and we're over 15,000. And so again, just seeing how much momentum it's had within a short period of time has been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Great. And can I just ask a follow-up to that? The petition, who is that directed towards? Who's the recipient of the petition? Or is it sort of an open petition?
Yeah, so that's straight to the top. So again, federal down. So again, nationwide. Students take testing that was established kind of turn of the century as an accountability piece. It's changed its name over time, but that's where a standardized test is straight to Betsy DeVos saying, hey, Betsy, like, there's no way we can do any meaningful assessment of kids in any equitable way. This has to stop. And so cancel the test. And so on the way, we know that there's all sorts of people in power that can reinforce that push and that charge to her. We know obviously that office is changing in terms of new presidency, but that message would still be the same. And so wanting that message to be loud and clear, and to reinforce that being loud and clear is why we would on the 15th are having that time where all the educators are united in saying, like, we matter. And our students matter.
And just to clarify too, this is like beyond eradicating standardized tests during distance learning. We're talking about getting rid of the system of accountability, period, right? Or accountability in air quotes, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for adding the air quotes. I mean, you know, as a teacher, like, yeah, we want our kids to learn and we want to know where they're at. So having accountability with a kid, like, hey, show up and engage and learn and grow. But yeah, what that looks like would be way different than what it is now. So just knowing that, hey, giving the same bubble test to a kid in New York and Texas and Oregon, they're gonna be learning in different ways. And so kids will show their growth in different ways. Growth is dynamic. We just recognize, yeah, we could try to tear down the whole system, but we've learned with Teachers for Good Trouble that solidarity and momentum is bigger than trying to tackle everything at once. So knowing, hey, most people hands down know a pandemic is not a testing scenario. If we can't test for COVID, why would we test for learning? Mm-hmm. And so just knowing that there can't be really equity in that. And so this is a low-hanging fruit. as Shivy and other people have reminded us in this movement. And so, yeah, it's easy to pick that off. And so let's take that apple and get rid of that now. But ultimately, yeah, standardized tests in general, there's huge inequities that need to be addressed. You know, there's obviously conscious and unconscious bias and racism that's in place. I'll just go ahead and say that, like, I'm a white male, and I know that most of the country is centered around me and what's normal for me. And so that test is written in many ways for me and not for millions of other kids and other people in the country to feel like they belong. So those are obviously bigger rallying cries we have, but the low-hanging fruit again is, hey, during a pandemic, this is an easy win and an easy call for most people right now.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that some states have been asking for the waiver, and so far Betsy's been denying those.
Yeah, most recently she did ask Congress, like she kind of passed the book to Congress. She's like, hey, Congress, do this. As kind of a last ditch effort, I guess, to look good. But some states aren't applying for them. So that means teachers are still having to go into schools in person and test children for standardized tests. We have news reports of teachers getting COVID due to this. We have news reports of students getting COVID due to this. And we also have some states, we have teachers in other states saying that their state will still test even if they do get the waiver. We're trying to get, we have to have a federally mandated like statement canceling standardized tests this year, kind of like what we had back in March.
Gotcha. So, you know, a lot of people, listeners maybe might think, well, what's really wrong with, I mean, don't we need to be doing standardized testing? Don't we need to be measuring what students are learning? Why don't teachers want this testing? Do they not want to be held accountable for their students' learning? I mean, how would you respond to that sort of questioning?
Yeah, that's one huge benefit of the social media and just broader awareness really quickly as we're maybe bored in our homes, is knowing that, yeah, COVID, like people are dying, like kids are dying, teachers are dying. When teachers and students are put in a position where they're forced to go to an unsafe environment to take testing, that's a very different factor than your typical testing environment. So though, of course, we question the validity of these tests anyway, and that's where we're seeing, like in Florida, where like people are being forced. One reason we have, you know, a big rally in Atlanta is a lot of those teachers, they can't unionize. They can't really take a stand for their own health, for their own rights. So it's very much, if you want to keep your job, then you must risk your health. So I think this, what's unique, obviously, in this year of testing is their health is on the line. Beyond all the other issues that might come up when kids are going to be exposed to COVID and people may end up dying or people have already died as a result of testing, then we feel like, yeah, like life or death, that being the determining factor, it should be kind of low-hanging fruit.
So who's really pushing for this testing? I mean, does Betsy DeVos really care that much about our kids and that she wants them testing? Who are the people that are pushing back against teachers and saying, no, we need to do this state standardized test? And why are they doing that?
There's some varying reports where some principals are. I mean, we've had some group members say that their principals simply want to continue doing it for bragging rights. They want to look good with these test scores. So there's that, the weird competitiveness that comes with public education sometimes in these scores. The testing companies have a lot to lose if teachers stop giving standardized tests. $1.7 billion worth of losing. And they often lobby our legislators. They are the ones kind of pulling the strings, making sure that schools are paying this money to pay to take these tests, even if they don't actually give us any actual real data that we can use to assess these kids, to have teacher accountability. Because the scores I look at aren't my kids' scores. They aren't like the tests that my kids take. They're tests they took 2 years ago. So a lot of the times it's not even like data that teachers can use, and it's one day, it's one situation where a kid could have been sick, a kid could have been stressed, and there's no telling what was going on in that kid's life at the time. And again, this is just, again, like reasons to not do the standardized test, but definitely the main players are those like legislators, the lobbyists, the testing companies who are making the money off of it.
So I heard that you mentioned an action in Atlanta. And so I'm wondering what the group has been up to, aside from the petitions, but maybe you could talk about some of the either different actions that have happened in different places or other things that you're organizing around.
Yeah, no, thanks for asking, because we're pumped and excited about it. We have members who just joined yesterday and said, hey, we want to start one in our city. How do we do that? And so we're calling it a sick out, or it could be a day without teachers. So knowing, hey, if you didn't have teachers show up, you'd notice, and kids would notice, and they would want to know why. So just cities that we've already got planned, DC, New York, like I said, Atlanta, LA, in New Jersey, Houston, Charlotte, and probably more. And so we know that this isn't going to just end on the 15th, as that will just kind of keep growing to raise that awareness. But it gets people's attention when they hear, hey, you're not showing up to work. Why? Or what do you mean by this petition? And you're actually doing actions and not just words, that makes a statement.
So, when you were talking about the action in Atlanta, were you talking about a upcoming, or did they already have some actions that they participated in? Have there been previous actions before the 15th?
Yeah. So, and Chandra, you can jump in anytime, but all of us are coordinating all those rallies to happen the same day. So on the 15th, December 15th, we're flooding social media. It's obviously on our website, passing it around, share it, like it. But yeah, all of those will be happening the 15th. And, you know, when we have ones in the future, just trying to keep that solidarity just on the same day so people can feel it. That even if it's not happening in Oregon, knowing that it's happening in other states, in general, I've been in contact with, our union at the state level, or our Department of Education, and Oregon's put in for the waiver. So we have at least that momentum and that support in Oregon. So one main reason we're not doing the rally, of course, here is because of COVID and kind of lockdown stuff going on. But also knowing we have that waiver in place, but that should never stop us from supporting everybody else in the country and from spreading that cause and raising awareness, because we're all in this. And I think COVID has shown that too. Like, no state is on its own. We're all going through the same experience. And so wanting to ally and speak for those who may not have a voice in their state.
And December 15th is actually an important date because of that. They chose December 15th because that was the date that the First Amendment was ratified in the Constitution. So they're exercising their right to assembly, their right to free speech, their right to petition their government. And the people doing this, especially like Atlanta, and I know educators in Mississippi and educators in Tennessee, they risk their livelihoods, they're risking their jobs to come out and demonstrate and organize a sick out because they aren't allowed to. In their contracts, they can be fired for doing these things, but they're doing it. And we're also raising money and taking donations for those teachers who might actually lose their jobs so that we can support them in this work that they are doing.
And then what's next for Teachers for Good Trouble? Do you have things planned for after the 15th? And also, what is next for you two in terms of organizing around this and other education issues?
Yeah, well, I'll start. We're on different committees. One of the first things and one of the exciting things about it is the moment you join and, you know, we're going to send you an email. We're going to create an opportunity for you to help amplify our voice. And so we're actually in different committees and we'll communicate, but each committee has its own autonomy on expanding this in so many different ways. So I just know that this is, like I said, we'll probably have future rallies. A big thing is creating momentum for that larger conversation at your local level. So this isn't just talking to your national audience or your state audience, but it's talking to your colleague in your school, that person in your department, talking to your administrator. And so that those conversations can be ongoing, that it's obviously not just the 15th, but it's just that first step in a larger journey of what we want to overcome so that all students can get what they need beyond the pandemic.
Are you all?
Okay. I said, and like you said, the big picture goal here is to eradicate standardized tests, because we know that educators that are organizing this know that the standardized tests are racist in nature. They're racist in creation. They were created by the military to show that Black Americans were inferior to their white counterparts. And they couldn't get promotions. They couldn't move upward within the military. And then the education system in the form of the SAT adopted that practice. So it's bringing about some systemic changes in the form of standardized tests. And then individually, I'm, again, pursuing the same thing. I'm also in a community called Teachers Going Gradeless. And I'm working towards that other very systemic barrier for our students of color and our LGBTQ students, that the system, it works because that's how it was built, but it's ill effective in educating our public and our kids.
I'm really curious, what's your take on your local unions as far as taking any sort of position on this, or have you had any conversations at that level in your local?
Yeah, so I'll start. My union is a smaller district, and so there's a lot more easy relationships. And I, you know, the moment I brought it up, they're like, "Yeah, that seems like a no brainer." And yeah, we would want to cancel that, and you know, supportive of like, "Hey, kind of look ahead. You know, what do we need to do? What kind of, support do we need?" And just kind of amplifying it. So I know that in Oregon, like, even though we have the waiver, it's still great to use that waiver as a voice of like, yes, this is a bigger issue. And of course it should be waived. And so that's one reason why I know my union was behind it, is that they knew that the state was already having that momentum, that we're not like an outsider as a union in supporting that waiver.
Yeah, I know that we've been having discussions in PAT about the ELPA, which is the, you know, the exit exam for English language learners. And everyone all the way from, you know, teachers, students, of course, and administrators and district people, and even the ODE recognize that the test is unfair and that it's inappropriate to use right now, and it can only be done in person, which we aren't allowing. And yet there's no alternative. So kids are stuck not being able to exit ESL classes, and therefore that's a class that they can't take in art or music or shop or, you know, any other electives. So it's, you know, basically a discriminatory practice, and yet we have no alternative because we're so fixated on standardized tests that they, you know, got rid of the portfolio assessment and things like that. So we know that there are things that used to be in place that were gotten rid of that are not standardized based on what students are actually learning. And yet they're not given, we're not given the opportunity to use those tools just to be in line with standardization across the country. And so it's just like, that to me was a perfect kind of example of how standardized testing is so harmful to our students.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, a lot of harm has been done and will continue to be done without it being stopped.
So is the idea that if there is some positive momentum around the country to get rid of standardized tests during the pandemic, it sort of acts as leverage to move that conversation beyond this time and place and to the future? And if it is, what do you think some good steps to moving that idea forward?
Absolutely. I mean, we've already seen that it can be done. There are so many things that this pandemic has shown light on, the things that couldn't possibly be done before we're doing. We can give kids internet. We can give them hotspots. We can, those Chromebooks that could have never left the school before, we're handing them out. And so I think this is definitely the first step because it's showing it can be done. And then like maybe we can get some momentum to pass legislation to provide better ways for teachers to have that accountability to show proficiency or mastery beyond a test. Such as, like you said, portfolios, or maybe an exit interview, which would be more, you know, helpful for students going into the world and whatever it is that that means for them. Because not all kids are going to college. Not all kids are pursuing four-year degrees. There's so many different things that they are doing that they don't need to be able to bubble in answers for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and part of, you know, that's a silver lining in this pandemic is that it's forced conversations that maybe we weren't willing to have earlier about education, or we couldn't even imagine. So just it being able to imagine, oh, there's grad, you know, that there are programs that are accepting college students without an SAT. And we used to think, oh, they have to do the SAT. Oh, actually they waived it this year. And, you know, so it's opened up that door. And so we want to keep that door opening wider because it's been a barrier when we've closed that door on so many people. Mm-hmm. So there are obviously issues with that test, kind of like what Shonda was talking about, is recognizing how do we prepare students for their career, for their life, rather than thinking that college is the end of it or the ultimate goal. Because we've also seen, sadly, people leaving college and still not using their degrees or not feeling ready or not feeling equipped. And so I think, again, that's a national conversation everybody's having now of recognizing, yeah, maybe we didn't think of it before, but do we need this? Maybe we don't need this barrier anymore. Maybe we can keep that barrier down. So again, I do think looking ahead past COVID, those conversations, people are going to be more open to continuing than if we didn't have this pandemic to reset and recenter ourselves and really kind of rehumanize us into how we learn and grow and engage.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us and having this interview with us and joining us on KBOO. And thanks to Jamie Partridge, who helps us with our sound file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul